Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now, and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them, and you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Paul Vann. Paul is the founder and president of Wealth Building Academy, which is a leadership consultancy based in Fort Washington near Washington, D.C. Before he became an entrepreneur, though, Paul served over 20 years in the U.S. Air Force. He retired with the rank of lieutenant colonel after serving 12 consecutive years in the Pentagon and a year as a Capitol Hill fellow working with a member of Congress in the U.S. House of Representatives. So definitely a distinguished career there. So welcome to the show, Paul. I'm really glad to have you here.
Well, Scott, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to be a guest on your show. Amazing show because you're helping military people, and I love that. But it's my honor to be here, and also the fact that you're also a fellow veteran makes it even great. We're going to have a lot of fun, Scott.
I think so. Yeah. I just through talking with you, we met a few weeks ago. Obviously, we talked for a little bit, and just kind of hearing a little bit of your story back then, kind of just made me think this is going to be a great episode. We're gonna have that just that good connection, I think, and we'll be able to share quite a bit about your background and what it is that you're doing now to help out folks. Through your stuff, but we'll get into that in just a bit. So, I mentioned earlier, you served 20 years in the Air Force. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What inspired you to join the military? How did those experiences, kind of shape what you're doing now?
Well, Scott, great question. And, when it comes to me joining the military, it didn't start out too good for me, Scott. Here's what we have. When I was growing up, my parents had a black and white TV. And in the evening, the great Walter Cronkite would come on and he would be talking about the Vietnam veteran casualties. And I told my parents, I'll never serve in the military. Never did I know that I would serve 20 years. what really changed my mind, I was a first generation high school graduate, first generation college graduate, and 2 years into college, I decided I would go into the ROTC program, 2-year program at North Carolina State University. And I went to basic training for 6 weeks in Dover, Delaware, close to the beach, Scott. What happened, I got up there, I did not know whether I would join ROTC when I returned. I had never flown on a plane before. And 3 weeks into the training, after getting up at 5 a.m. to Reveille, inspections every morning, doing a mile and a half run, exercise, and then marching to breakfast. Third week into the program, we flew on the flight, C-5, the largest aircraft in the world, the length of a football field. We flew over Bermuda, which made me a little bit nervous. But I survived. And I thought, this wasn't so bad. And 2 weeks later, the entire training camp was flown to Columbus, Mississippi, and we had what was called flight orientation, which meant we put on the uniform of a pilot in a two-seat aircraft, and we flew up to 10,000 feet, and then all of a sudden the pilot said, take the stick, this jet. So I took the stick, and I flew a little while, and then he started doing maneuvers, upside down wheelbarrows. And he asked me, he said, Paul, are you okay? I said, I think so, but I just can't breathe that good right now. I'm nervous. Well, we landed. Everything worked out great. We went back, finished off the encampment. I went back to ROTC, and I just decided my buddy, Gary Hamby, is a fellow I met at basic training. He raised his hand. I raised mine. And so I went through the two-year program. Fast forward, I graduated, received my business degree from Shaw University, and then a distinguished graduate of ROTC at North Carolina State University. And then I came on active duty and served my first 4 years at Scott Air Force Base in Dayton, doing a lot of acquisition work, purchasing aircraft, that type of thing. And then I went to a program called Education for Industry in Atlanta. Then I went to Scott Air Force Base. And Scott Air Force Base was Headquarters Communications Command. And then after 8 years, Scott, something just came to my mind and said, hey, you know, I always wanted to work for a Fortune 500 company. And so I actually got recruited by Mobil Oil, and I worked in Houston and Beaumont, Texas, for Mobil Chemical. And then 2 years later, I received a recall to come back on active duty by this colonel from the Pentagon, from the Air National Guard, from the National Guard Bureau. And I thought, really? He said, yeah. Only problem, Scott, I was 30 pounds overweight, physical, in San Antonio in 3 weeks. And so in 3 weeks, I lost 33 pounds.
Wow. Okay.
And just running and cutting out all the good Cajun food. Worked over in New Orleans, eating all that good food over there. But I lost the weight and I came back on duty and I served 12 straight years in the Pentagon and worked for National Guard Bureau, Air National Guard Directors, Army Guard Directors, Foreign Military Sales Program. And it was quite a experience. I would not trade not one day for that experience. I would do it again. I'd do it three more times because I just really enjoyed it. It was exciting. There was so much to do. Sometimes there were foreign military sales programs. We work with foreign governments. Or one day I find myself negotiating in the Dutch embassy on behalf of the U.S. government.
Oh, wow.
And then eventually I came in with that that one-year program with the Capitol Hill Fellowship Program. So I worked for a member of Congress in the U.S. House of Representatives, and he happened to be working on the House Armed Services Committee. So that's really the reason why I ended up working with him.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, it's, I mean, that sounds like a pretty interesting career, especially, you know, getting out, you know, dipping your toe into the corporate world. And then, you know, like many of us do, we don't keep up with the PT and the strict diets and you know, all the things that we're supposed to do while we're serving, right? We don't necessarily keep up with that 100%. I mean, some people do, but not everybody. And we track a bit, and you get that recall notice and you realize you gotta do something quick to fix that. Yeah, and you did, though. And that's the incredible part, is you only had a few weeks to drop that weight. And I don't think if I just stopped eating for 3 weeks altogether, I would lose that much weight that quickly. I don't know, maybe I would, but it just seemed like a huge task, but you were up to the challenge. So so that's awesome. So you're also involved in the family readiness program as well, through the National Guard. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. After I retired, I was offered the opportunity to come on as a contractor because I have a financial background. So I know how to move the money around. With the Air Guard, we had maybe 105 different units spread throughout the U.S. Mm-hmm. So they knew by bringing me on family readiness, I can also do the budget piece for the Army Guard as well, which I had worked closely with the Army Guard anyway. Mm-hmm. And what happened, I decided to go into the family readiness. And here's the irony of it. I'm one of 10 children, so I'm used to family, right? Five boys and five girls. So it was fitting for me to be working with family readiness.
Sure, sure.
And what was great about it, Scott, is that it really gave me that hands-on opportunity to work with families and make a difference. we at the time I was working with them was Desert Shield, Desert Storm after that. And so there were a lot of deployments taking place. So it really helped that I worked with those families at that time, because actually that's part of what I did when I was on active duty before that, doing the legislative work, especially working with the House and Senate Armed Services Committees.
Now, could you tell us for the listeners maybe who aren't familiar with what the Family Readiness Program is all about, could you tell us what the program's all about, any specific support or things like that it provides to military families?
Sure. And in fact, it's one thing that I was not aware of even when I was on active duty. It really kind of came about probably over the last couple of decades, if you will, for the Guard. I know the active duty have it, but what they provide is connection with, let's use it, the Guardsmen as an example, and their families. It guides them from the first day they're on duty throughout their career. And we know everyone is not Title 10, which is full-time active duty, versus a Title 5. It's different. And what happens is they provide different services, health and wellness, financial, with housing, education, spouse education, child care, all types of things. Even sure. A person gets hurt with TRICARE and the children. So they provide all kinds of services. And for the Guard Reserves, they are part of intricate part of the community, because everything is local. They drill once a month, and the Guard and Reserve. And as a result, they ended up needing services. So when they meet on those weekends, these are the issues that they talk about. But it makes a big difference. And the source for them to get this information for military people, not only veterans, but active duty and the Guard and Reserve, is to go to Military One Source. So it's www.militaryonesource.mil, M-I-L. Yeah, that's www.militaryonesource.mil. And people say, okay, so how do I find the Guard and Reserve? They have a little box in there to ask, what are you trying to find? And what you do is you type in the words National Guard Family Programs, and it will pull up the National Guard piece. And then you can find out the different locations by state.
Okay.
And for, let's say, for the state of Arizona or the state of North Carolina, where I'm from, I would type in North Carolina, would show me my unit, the 145th Airlift Wing out of Charlotte, North Carolina. So it would show everything. And I used to work in Arizona in Tucson with the 167th.
Okay.
And so I looked up theirs today just to make sure they're still there. They're still there. And a lot of my good friends, and I looked that up. And so it would show you everywhere. And then for the Guard and Reserve, you can look at the unit, at the unit level as well.
Okay.
And you can look that up. It has the phone numbers and everything in there.
And I think that's especially important. I think it's important across the entire military to have these family programs available to help out with things, especially when there's deployments involved, right? But I think especially with regards to the National Guard and reserve components, where you're not going to necessarily be in a military community when your spouse or, you know, a loved one or something is deploying, and having that connection to a military community where you may have people spread out across, you know, a pretty wide geographic area, maybe where they're able to come together and meet and help each other and do different things together, whatever those types of things are that they might, whatever types of services they might need. You know, there is a place, you know, where I was in the National Guard in Connecticut,
and
it's not a big military community in Connecticut. I mean, there's a Navy sub base in Connecticut, but outside of that, there's not too much as far as, you know, active duty or anything like that. Military bases, you have to travel to New York, Massachusetts, somewhere around there to find other bases. And it's pretty spread out. Right. So, so when we deployed, it was kind of relying on the family readiness programs to kind of bring some of those families together, as far as the resources go and things like that. There was no base that they could go to and, you know, go, go seek services on the base or anything like that, at least not nearby anyway. So, so those family programs are certainly important. Right. Now in your experience dealing with these, the families in these programs, what are some of the challenges that, that these military families are facing, and how does the Family Readiness Program help them out with these challenges?
Sure. And a great question, because what happens is we know today that one of the greatest challenges that the military as a whole is facing is the mortgages. About 6,000 people went through forbearance, which means they're heading towards mortgage foreclosure. And then another 34,000 are delinquent, meaning that they may possibly lose their house in the future unless the government does something to help them. And the government is part of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And they are the people who work with the VA, and they put a pause on the mortgage foreclosures for about 6 months. So in May of 2024, they are going to have to make a decision, the VA and the Congress, in terms of how they're going to handle the family. So housing is number one. If we don't have a place to stay, well, it's just going to add up to the number of homeless veterans mm-hmm. and the families. The second part is food insecurity. And this is something that just kind of blew me away, because I did not know it was that bad, but it's at 24% of all military have food insecurity. In other words, what inflation has done for us, it has created a situation that it can't keep up pace with it. Wow. So when the Federal Reserve was increasing those interest rates, they were doing harm to the readiness at the same time, because they just don't get pay raises that often.
Right. And when they do, it's not right. enough, you know, to match that, right?
Exactly. So we have the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act, which was just passed last week. And it looks like the pay raise may be 5.2%. You're going to have some increases in the E6 and below, where they'll get increases, the junior enlisted. They're going to get some increases in the separation pay, going from $250 to $400. And then if a person is overseas. So there are some increases coming in, but even at 5.2%, it still doesn't keep pace with those half a percentage increases over the last 24 to 36 months. It's just been too much. Right. Some other challenges they're facing is from a health and wellness standpoint. Everybody knows that pandemic did a lot of damage to all of us. We didn't see it coming. Not even me. I keep up with everything. I didn't see it coming, Scott. And the next thing we know, we're at home. Well, when we're at home, that impacts everything.
Yeah.
The supply lines that were impacted with food, with everyday what we call kitchen table issues, bread, milk, et cetera, all of those things were impacted. But when we look at the military families, it's even more stagnant, because we oftentimes have that separation. And what is also impacted, Scott, is the enlisted ranks. Military enlistments are down in all branches of the service except the Space Force, because it's a brand new shiny object, right?
Right. Everyone,
if I was going back in active duty, Scott, you and I, we'd be trying to get to Space Force.
That's right. That's right.
They have the big budgets and everything. And but all the services are experiencing that. In fact, about a month ago, maybe a little bit over a month ago, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he came to the Senate. He was heading to the Pentagon as well, went over there and spoke to them, because he's trying to help in his efforts to increase the enlistment rate with our young troops. What's happening is that they're having problems with barriers to entry. And the barriers to entry include things such as not being able to pass the entrance exam, obesity, criminal records, and drug use are just some of the things. So we're trying to find ways to really get them excited about it again and joining the military. That is a good thing. Now, granted, you know, Walter Cronkite scared the bejeevers off of me. He scared the hair off me. I used to have long hair, but he scared the hair off of me. He's a casualty. So the young people, just like I was watching Walter Cronkite, were afraid of getting hurt, injured, or dying. And I'll tell them, I said, well, I had that same fear, but I had it no more. I ended up serving 20 years, unbeknownst to me.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, that is a fear, that, you know, anyone who's enlisting or, you know, going into the, to become an officer of any sort, that's something that you have to realistically consider. It's like, am I willing to do this? You know, and that's a big ask to ask them to do. Right. But then you also have to think, like, what is it that I'm actually doing? I'm serving something that's way bigger than myself. Exactly. And, you know, is this something that I'm willing to fight and die for, you know, by serving my country or my community in cases of, you know, like National Guard, troops, you know, where they are, you know, able to be deployed locally within their state, you know, that's something you got to think about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we look at how families impact that, we know when a guardsman or reservist, they go from that part-time status to full-time Title 10, then the family themselves are moved up as well. So they have to get some ID cards. They'll need to get that because now they're coming from the federal side. And the way the tours have been happening, let's say over the last maybe 36 months, there have been more Guard and Reserve deployments than active duty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we look at the Guard, the Army and Air Guard, we're looking at about a little bit over 430,000 people. Air Guard, maybe 100,000. The Army Guard, maybe more in the three area, just looking at that, with a total population of active of 1.5 for all services.
Yeah.
So we could do a lot more to help our members of the military. We have to look at things such as taxes. When tax season rolls around, they need financial assistance. The finances is the really big issue now. Healthcare is a big issue because we have fewer doctors now. A lot of them retired. The pandemic really took a toll on them. They retired. Many of them just decided to stop altogether. They've moved away. And that's impacted the military as well. We have a shortage of pilots, of course, in the Air Force.
Yeah.
But we have an even larger decline in the healthcare arena because everyone saw that what happened. And then the cases with people who didn't take the vaccines and everything.
That's right. And you mentioned the pilot shortage. I think not too long ago, I saw a thing that they're offering pilots like a $600,000 bonus or something like that to stay on or you know, extend their contract or whatever. I was like, man, I went into the wrong field.
Me too. I was in the right field, but I couldn't see.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it now, but you know, back then, I probably would have been able to do that. But man, that is crazy, and it's
an incentive there.
That's a huge incentive. That type of money. I mean, you know, there's always some sort of bonuses out there for, you know, depending on the MOS that you're talking about. But that's the biggest one I think I've ever heard. Is that kind of money?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Wow. That's quite a bit.
Yeah. So we've been talking about the families and the family readiness and things like that. With regards to community engagement, maybe outside of the military community, but just folks in, you know, towns or cities and things like that, just folks being aware of what military families are in need of. You did recently a speaking tour in support of the National Military Family Association. How did that speaking tour impact those places that you visited, and as far as raising awareness, and what types of stuff did you talk about with those communities?
Sure, and thank you for asking that, Scott. The National Military Family Association has been around for about 50 years, and it's a nonprofit organization. And I'll give you their website. It's www.militaryfamily.org, because they're, of course, a nonprofit. But what they do is they connect and provide oversight for all the military families. Things such as the continuity within the communities. They go to Capitol Hill and they advocate on behalf of the military families. They advocate on behalf of pay increases, better health care, child care. They provide scholarships to the spouses, the women. Provide them with scholarships and some with also with job opportunities. So they are a critical part of the process. Now, when I went on the 12 City Speaking Tour, it was the very first time this was ever conducted. And they have these programs you may have heard of called Operation Purple. And they're summer camps and they're for youth. But of course, if we're talking youth, we're talking about the family as well, because we want the students to have a great experience. And the parents happen to be in the military. So I went on this 12 city speaking tour. I'll tell you where I went. Started out in Pennsylvania. And the young lady who was captured in Iraq, Jessica, she was there. And she was captured, I believe, in Iraq.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Was it Jessica Lynch? Is that what?
Yeah, Jessica Lynch. She was one of the speakers on the first part there in Pennsylvania. Then when I left there, I went to Utah. Out the Hill Air Force Base. Then I went to Ohio, where I actually had my first duty station at Wright-Patterson in that area. Then I went to Georgia, well, North Carolina, my home state. Then I went to Georgia, Warner Robins, Georgia, which I used to work at when I was just starting out in the Air Force. Then I went to Florida. Then I left there and I went to Montana, the most beautiful state on the planet, the beautiful place. And I spent several days there. Then I went to the Tacoma, Washington. I spent about 9 days out there in the Seattle area. Okay. And at that point, I broke my luggage. The wheel just broke from all the travel. I bought a new bag at Fairchild Air Force Base. Then I flew to Hawaii. Then I went out to Guam. And I spoke at Pearl Harbor out there in Honolulu. And then I left there and I went to Oklahoma, and then I went to Texas and finished up in Texas, beautiful place up in Texas. And what I talked to the youth about was resilience, how to be resilient in the absence of your parent who is serving a duty, getting them to think in terms of just being more responsible, volunteering to help in the community, help their family, doing the right thing with their grades, some who are old enough to get jobs, applying for college, and just being a asset to the family more than anything else. So I gave them that resilience piece. And this is actually a book that I created for them. If you can see it right here.
Okay, yeah.
Our Military Youth, Our Greatest Asset. Yeah. And so I talked to them. I'll just pass on just a few items here. Trying to have normalcy in their life. Reassurance that everything is going to be fine, which we know is tough when you and your parent is gone in war. Have humor in the life, find creative outlets and communication, being able to communicate, and then have courage, be outstanding at whatever they do, excellence, perseverance. And that's primarily what that was about. And of course, the families were there as well. And these camps are still going on to this day. There are not as many of them, but they're still taking place. But overall, what we're doing is just giving the young children an opportunity to get some of that pressure out of their lives. And then, of course, when the service member comes back, in some cases, both the mother and the father that were deployed.
Yeah.
And so coming back, you have to reintegrate the parents into that family, one or the other, or both. And so that's also a piece of it.
Yeah, I know when I deployed, coming back home, we had, my wife had just given birth to our first son, probably a month or so before, a month and a half, 2 months before I deployed. And so I came home. And the whole family dynamic had changed because now we have this new little baby who's living in our house and where do I fit in now? And trying to figure that out, that was not, that was not an easy thing to figure out. But I mean, my wife was great, you know, not throwing me in the deep end, you know, with everything, parenting duties and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it was a struggle. I've talked to other people that it's a real struggle coming back home and trying to figure out how do I fit back in, especially when, you know, you might have left when your kid's, you know, obviously a little bit younger, and he grows up over the course of a year, year and a half, or however long it is that you're gone, and their personalities change. How do you how do you get back into their lives, and how do you, you know, figure out your place, your role in the family again? And that's a difficult thing. And so, yeah, having those conversations, I think, is definitely you know, a necessary thing to do. Right.
Oh, for sure. And again, that's where the Military OneSource can come in, because they do offer free counseling.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great things. And they have wellness programs and de-stress apps that people, you don't even have to go anywhere. You can do it just like we're doing this, you know, virtually.
Yeah.
And so it works out really great. But they, like you said, there's that re-engagement and the experience of that military member and what they saw and what they had to do. I mean, it is not easy. It's not easy.
You know, when you're living together with somebody and you're living life day after day after day, you're in the same house, you see people every day, maybe not 24 hours a day because, you know, you go to school, you go to work, you know, whatever, but you're growing together. Things happen to you and they change, but that other person's there with you and they see that change and they understand, okay, that's why dad is a little bit different, because this happened to him, maybe a car accident or got laid off from work or something. Maybe we can rationalize that, right? But when you're not there together and, you know, somebody's deployed, they're overseas, they're, you know, in a combat situation, and then the rest of the family is at home and they're going to school and they're going to work and they're going to do all the things that they normally do, when mom or dad comes back and they're a lot different than they were when they left, you know, a lot of things are different. It's sometimes hard to be like, well, what's wrong with them? You know, that's a tricky thing. So I'm glad that those resources exist, the counseling and the, you know, all the tools that are available for folks, you know, like you said, like the de-stressing kind of apps and things like that, things that could just help make things just that much easier to get back into it. Right.
And they also have a lot of health and fitness too. To me, that also helps a lot, because that takes away a lot of stress, and one can focus in on their own person, their own being.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have these programs when I was in there. They just didn't exist. But with things being more virtual, it's actually worked out to be a really great thing.
Yeah. Yes. It's nice that technology does exist, that we can do things virtually like that. I mean, there's pros and cons to it, right? Like, obviously, you don't want to just be totally isolated and just doing things on your phone or on your computer or whatever. You want to be able to get out and see people. But there might be that period of time where you're like, I'm just not quite ready. I'm not there yet. But I have this thing that can kind of help me get to that point. And then I can go find those other resources, you know, out in person, that type of thing.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah. So going back to your days working on Capitol Hill, you also, just kind of changing gears a little bit, but you also worked on a bill that was related to military funeral honor duties. Can you talk about this bill and the impact on the military families and their loved ones and things like that?
Sure. One day I'm sitting at my desk on Capitol Hill. And I get this tasking, and the tasking comes in is that we have a constituent who was a World War II veteran, and they had his funeral, and they were trying to, the funeral home was trying to schedule for the military honor duty, work with the military to get them there, the VA to get them there. Well, they were not able to come up with them. Number one, they had a problem. They didn't have enough buglers. Buglers were retiring. They didn't have people who come in and actually perform the duty. It's what's required is two members at a minimum, and one from the service in which the deceased served in. So if there's Air Force, it'd be one Air Force and one Army or Marine, Navy, whoever. And what happened, they didn't have the budget for it either. And so this bill, House Resolution 2283, was a bill to enhance the military funeral honor. So now we're going to go, we're going to pay these service members. I think it started out at about $50 for them to come out. And so they would come out and perform that duty, have the bugler, or they would have a recording. people prefer not having to record and actually having the bugler there, and then having the military funeral on a detail, and they have the flag, and they present that flag to the family. And so I work with the VA. I never thought I'd work with the funeral directors from the whole country, Scott, but I did. It was really interesting because, you know, we know death is a part of life. Yeah. It's gonna happen to all of us. And so I learned a lot in that particular experience. And so what it did, it's made it so it's better. So I look up the military funeral honor duty process today just to see how everything is going. But they have it in the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act, which will be signed by the president very soon. And so they're still trying to make it even more modernized and even more. So all members receive it. If you receive an honorable discharge, then you're going to have a military funeral honor either at Arlington Cemetery, or you're going to have it in a state cemetery for veteran cemetery. And so that's really how it worked. But to me, the military funeral honor detail, going back to the story that member, you can only do it right one time. In other words, if you blow it and they don't show up, you can never redo that.
Right.
And that's why it's so important. But the bill that I wrote, I drafted the language up, and then I had to give it to a legislative lawyer, and then he put it in the legal lease, how it's supposed to read, you know, for the budget itself. And it did make a difference. And I'm fortunate that when I was being promoted, I got promoted when I was on Capitol Hill, when I was in that Capitol Hill fellowship. And unbeknownst to me, I had a picture where I was actually being pinned on and a picture of the bill.
Really? That's awesome. Yeah. That's a great combination to have, right?
Blew me away because they surprised me. They caught me off guard, Scott.
That's great. That's a nice little surprise to have there. The reason why I wanted to bring this up, obviously this does impact military families because, you know, the loss of their loved one, that is a stressful, it's a possibly traumatic time. A lot of emotions are going into this. And one of the things that you want to do for anyone who has served is you want to be able to honor that military service if that's the wishes of that person. And, you know, having the proper military honors there and especially having their branch represented there, I think it's really important. You know, you can't, but I understand you also can't just do it for free and have, you know, there's costs involved and there are things like that. So there, unfortunately, you know, a bill like this does need to exist to, you know, provide the funding and that type of thing. But, but now that it exists, you know, I've been to several military funerals and everyone that I've been to I'm not sure when this bill passed.
This one, it was in 1999.
Okay. So
there have been some that have come after that, of course.
Sure. Yeah. So maybe they improved upon it, you know, since then. But every single one that I've been to, there's been a live bugler there. You know, the 21 gun salute. They had the flag, the whole nine yards. What you would imagine a military funeral to be like, all the bells and whistles. It was there for every single one of them, and from a Gold Star family member, I lost my brother in Afghanistan, and so that was one of the funerals that I'm referring to. And I want to thank you for doing all
you
that.
And your mother. And your family, because I know that's not easy, Scott.
Sure. Yeah. It's not easy. Yeah. And it's not easy for anyone, but I think having that, that respect, that honor, bestowed upon him was, I don't want to say it made it easy. Obviously it was still a hard time, but it was good knowing that there were people there who, quite frankly, who gave a damn and
right. Who cared?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, and they were willing to come out, and do the proper honors,
And he deserved it. And sure. Your family deserved to have that honor bestowed upon him. Yeah. Because to say if they did not provide it that way, it would have been not a good situation. And that's really the reason why I ended up writing that bill to help that process along. For example, the member I worked for, they were in the minority in terms of the House was concerned.
Sure.
So a lot of times your bills don't get presented, but I was able to get it bipartisan, you know, in the House and the Senate. So,
and I think that's a good thing that went bipartisan, yeah. that politics didn't come into it. Like we're going to use this as some sort of, leverage for some other bill or something. No. We're going to come together on this one because it's the right thing to do. Exactly. So that's great. I'm glad to hear that's the way that turned out. For folks who are unfamiliar with the Family Readiness Program, and maybe they're listening to this and they're like, okay, I didn't even know that this thing existed. How can military families get involved? What does that entail as far as like, how do they get involved? Who do they reach out to? I know you mentioned there was a website, but is there any other things that they should know?
Well, what happened, they can go to the unit level. And for example, I could go to Charlotte, the 145th, and they will have a family program there.
Okay.
And they will have the opportunity, even now I can go in if I wanted to and volunteer with them. And they might have a food pantry as an example, or they could have a PTA. I was the PTA president for 2 years, Scott. I didn't know I was that brave. But right there at Joint Base Andrews, and I was elected the first PTA president for a brand new school where my two kids attended school. I did it for 2 years. First year we raised $25,000. Second year we raised $25,000. Wow. And a lot of it because there were competitions for if we sold cookie dough. Cookie dough is a big thing. We sold $13,000 worth of cookie dough because the units on the base, guard and reserve and active, were competing to see who could purchase the most. I loved it.
That's great. Well, you know, it's raising money for a good cause and put a little competition in there, especially amongst military units.
Exactly.
You're gonna see those numbers tick up real high.
Sure. But going back to what you were saying, if we look at some of the units, they're a little bit further out, they're away from the active duty, then there's a community right there. And it's a guard or reserve community. And so they go to the family readiness at that unit level, and they can also go at the state level because everything kind of trickles up or down. Mm-hmm. And they can go and volunteer, or someone can help them with housing. You know, a lot of people have that food insecurity, health care. And then, you know, the health and wellness aspect, that's probably bigger than anything right now because, again, the pandemic was just overwhelming. It really was. It really was.
Yeah, I mean, overwhelming for everybody, but just trying to navigate life after all of that craziness, exactly. Without some support, sometimes it might be too difficult for some people, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think of most all the branches of service, though, the Guard and Reserve probably fared better because they're used to that.
Yeah.
They're more used to not having as much as the active duty.
That's right.
And so in my opinion, their coping skills will be stronger because they had less to lean on or less resources, fewer least resources. And I know through doing the budget, I know they had fewer resources.
Sure.
Yeah, because I was made a comparison with Gene sales, Levi's Gene.
Okay.
They sold $5 billion a year. The Air National Guard's budget was $5
billion. Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting comparison.
I was sitting there looking at it like, jeans, readiness. Jeans, military readiness. It just didn't add up. I'm like, you need more money in the budget.
Yeah. So you do have a finance background then, looking at these numbers and making these kind of comparisons, right?
Yeah.
But that is an interesting way to look at it. You know, how much you spend on one thing versus another, and those genes versus you know, family readiness, what really is more important? Although I will say, depending on what year you're looking at those numbers for, probably when folks were dealing with the COVID situation, they're working from home. Right. They probably weren't buying all the dress clothes as much. They might've been in their jeans or maybe even sweatpants or whatever, you can't see on the camera.
and what I was just sharing is that was the Air National Guard's total budget.
Yeah.
Family readiness. And I looked at it and I was like, something is not adding up.
No. Right. No. And so you're talking total budget for
the Air Guard. Yeah.
The whole Air Guard. That is incredible.
That was probably over 20 years ago, but that's in comparison. I would love to see what it is today.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Because the price of jeans have gone up.
The price of jeans have gone up, but the price of everything has gone up too.
So I would say when we look at working in the community, there's never enough volunteers.
Sure.
But volunteers make the big positive difference. And so when we look at it, there's more than enough to go around, but there's also a greater need now. I think the focus now should really be on the children, because they, of course, are going to be, people say they're going to be leaders tomorrow. They're leaders today. Because they have to make tougher decisions than I did when I was their age.
Yeah, that's true.
So we got to work things up through the children and get them into, because, I have a leadership background.
Yeah.
And so we have to get our youth to understand leadership a lot better as well, because they're going to be the ones running the country.
Well, and, it's interesting, too, because I was having a similar conversation to this with my wife the other night, and we were talking about how even just the art of communication, just the verbal conversation like we're having right now, where just being able to talk to somebody, to maybe even find out hey, you got something going on that's maybe wrong with you, let's try to help you out and try to talk to you and figure it out. But my wife and I were saying, because we sometimes will go, walking around the neighborhood as early in the morning, just before life starts happening, right? But a lot of times you'll see the kids waiting out for the bus at the bus stops, and their faces are buried in their phones, and it's like, who are you talking to on that thing, or what are you doing on? There's 10 kids standing there, nobody's talking to each other, and so. Talk about leadership. I think one of the big things that you need to be able to do is communicate with people. If you can't do that, you're shot, right? So, I definitely think needs some work.
I have two Generation Z children. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Here's an example. I happen to see a payphone. Back in the day, you could put a quarter in there and talk to someone.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do. Yeah.
So my kids that they freaked out. What? Then I said, what I did with my kid, my son is 17, so he's still in high school. My daughter is a sophomore in college. Okay, I want you to write me a letter. Not that you have to send it to me, but I want you to write me a letter. I want you to put the envelope the way it should be. Okay. Here's a check. I just want you to write a check to me. And how to write check. And see, it's those things is how I'm getting breakthroughs. Well, I'm going to actually pay this utility bill this month, but I'm going to get you to write it for me.
Yeah.
I'll sign. Okay. I want to send a book. I want to mail a book to someone. Okay. I need you to put the label on here and write down their address. See, I'm finding ways to kind of get around it.
Yeah,
and I need to really get you off that phone. So what I had my daughter do last year, she finished up her freshman year. Each day, I would give her a different tasking to write down. And I did that because I want to get her into the habit of writing.
Yeah.
And it works. And I have the notebook. And I told her, I said, what we're going to do with this note? We can write a book. You've basically written a book.
Right.
Yeah.
The other day, I actually was working with my kids. I got them maps. Yes. Of our town. And I said, okay, here's 3 points that I want you to find on the map. And then I want you to highlight on the map, what is the route that you would take to get from point A to point B to point C, and then back to point A. And it was actually interesting because they were all able to find the points, and they're points that they're familiar with anyway. So it wasn't like too difficult for them to do, but they all came up with different routes going through the different streets and things like that. And you know, some were more, you know, just keep going on the straight line until you've hit this road or whatever. And others kind of looped around and squiggled, you know, through, but it was actually pretty interesting, and they enjoyed it too, you know.
That's a good way to do it. But but I'm like you, it's got to be communication, because unless you dial a number to talk to someone, you will not be communicating.
Right.
And but with a human being, you have to communicate. Or I would say, okay, when we sit down with my parents, you know, 10 kids, we rotated whenever we ate. And so we communicated. That was our parents' way of communicating with us.
Sure.
So I said, okay, I want to do the same thing.
Interesting. Okay.
One of my children, she'll talk, and you know, we'll talk regularly, but one, he won't talk. And again, he talked to the phone, but he won't talk to a human. And I said, well, a phone can't hire you for a job. I mean, you could talk to someone about a job, but that phone, you have to communicate with people, a supervisor, the leader of the company, you have to communicate with people.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Communication is key. And not just relying on the text messaging or the, you know, the social media or anything like that. It's the conversation that we're having right now, just getting a point across. And, you know, maybe you say something that I don't agree with, and, you know, I can tell you, hey, maybe here's my point of view, and we can talk and we can go back and forth. And it's just a way of communicating. And as far as leadership goes, you know, what you're talking, bringing it back to that, it's important, especially when there are disagreements, to be able to communicate those and do that effectively. When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them. You might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. So, so you mentioned, you know, sending out books and leadership stuff that you do. Tell us about the books that you have and workshops that you offer and the things that you do that people can get in touch with you and find out more about them.
Fantastic. And I know people who are listening, they can't see the book, but this is what it looks like here. I just published it. It came out in October.
Okay.
And actually went to mass market in November. Leadership is Influence. And I have here a three-pronged approach. So if young people want to know how to become a leader, this is how they can learn right here.
Excellent.
And then I've written three books total. I hit that point in my life where I just needed this. I was walking at Joint Base Andrews, and the spirit came to me and said, write this book. I said, okay, I can do that. It's the toughest book I've ever written because I didn't ever write anything on spiritual, but I'm a spiritual coach. And so I just help people through how they can find what they're about. And then this is the first book I wrote. This one talks a lot about what I did in the Pentagon and different things like that.
Excellent.
But people can actually get the book at www.leadershipisbook.com. Leadershipisinfluencebook.com.
Okay.
And of course, someone else had the URL, so I had to add book in order to get it close.
I had the same problem with my book.
Yeah.
Someone had it. And the thing was, they weren't doing anything with it. Like when you go to it, it was just like a GoDaddy landing page kind of thing. Exactly. Like there's no website to it. I was like, let the damn thing go so I can use it. Come on.
Exactly. And so, you know, we go through that. And but a book is just really a brochure. It's kind of an introduction. And so what I do is provide leadership development programs. So a person, they want to learn about my program, they can go to www.paulvanspeaks.com. I was able to get that. They'll see all the leadership. I have about 8 modules in there, and they can see all what I offer. I offer a lot of it to small businesses, corporations, colleges, and universities. And I can take people from A to Z in terms of how to help their talent management, how to coach people to success, open communication between a supervisor and the subordinate or the employee. And so those type of things. And but if they go to www.leadershipisinfluencebook.com, they'll be able to find everything there. And that would definitely help them out.
Excellent. Yes. Yeah. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes for the listeners to check out those books and find out more about, the type of stuff that you do. So before we wrap up this episode, I always like doing some humor and adding some humor to the end of the episode. I like to laugh. The guests usually like to laugh, especially having another veteran on the show. We can joke about some of this stuff, right? And so I'm going to do this segment. I like to call it, Is It Service Connected? And for the folks who aren't familiar with it, Is It Service Connected? It's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos, military edition. We look at someone doing something stupid, a service member doing something stupid, and we try to predict whether or not whatever happened in the video would qualify for disability down the line. Is it service connected, that type of thing. So for the audio listeners, obviously you're not going to be able to watch this video. I'll try to describe it, but your best bet is to go check out the episode on YouTube, Twitter, wherever this episode ends up. So check it out there, and that's going to be your best bet. So I'm going to get this video pulled up here so we can all take a look at it. Pull it up here. So right now, for the listeners, what we're looking at is, it says, caption on the screen, when you don't see your sergeant standing behind you. And right now, looks like maybe a Marine Corps uniform standing in the corner there. And I'm just going to have to hit play and see what happens here. Got to imagine it's going to be kind of embarrassing. Oh, yeah, it's embarrassing. The guy walks out wearing a dress. He clearly lost a bet or something. And his sergeant's just standing there. Yeah, it was a Marine Corps uniform. And he's doing all these poses, and he's acting, and now he realizes it. He realizes Sarge is there, and he really wished he didn't lose that bet at that point.
That's a good one.
That one, there's no disability for that. Unless he's going the you're old enough to remember this, the Corporal Klinger. Unless he's going that route and he's trying to try to get out on that. Although I don't know if that would work out these days. So
I think Hot Lips Houlihan would have straightened him out. Now, Scott, you know I watch that show every week, right?
It was on when I was a kid. I would watch it, but it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me back then. But since then, I've watched it on streaming on Netflix or whatever. Right. I forget whatever it's on, but my God, is that a funny show?
And it was.
It is hilarious, and all the hijinks and everything that they get into. So, MASH, for the younger listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, check that show out.
Absolutely.
That is something
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing, because when I was going through the summit recently, and I was going in high energy because that's who I am. And the lady asked me, she said, are you sure you're in the military? Because military people don't laugh and they don't have humor. I said, this is what we do.
Oh yeah. No, there's humor. Maybe a different kind of humor than what you might have been expecting, right?
Yeah. I told her, I said, what you see on TV or in the movies, I said, that's just acting. I said, in the real life, we talk to each other. We communicate. We have fun. It's family.
Yeah. And we can make fun of the other branches too. And since there's no other Marine Corps veteran on the show right now, we can totally make fun of the Marine guy who is dancing around in a dress, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. And of course, with me, I was in the Air Force. My brother was 33 in the Army. My uncle was 22 in the Navy. My cousin was 20 in the Marines. So we had all branches of the service.
And those numbers you were throwing out, that's how long they were in, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so none of those are short terms. Those are all, you said 33 was one of them?
My brother. He retired 3 years ago this month.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow. Good for him. Yeah. And definitely a strong military family that you're coming from. So.
Without a doubt.
So thank you so much for taking the time to join us, sharing the information about the family programs and everything that you do to support the military and the families that are out there. I really do appreciate not only your service and everything that you do now, but appreciate you also taking the time to come on. So thank you.
Well, Scott, I just want to say that you're my brother in arms, and I want to thank you for honoring me, giving me the opportunity to be a guest on the Drive On podcast. And I'm going to let everybody I know about you and about your podcast. So I thank you very much, and many blessings to you and your family during this holiday season. And again, I hold your brother in high esteem, my friend.
Trust me.
Yes, absolutely. And your mom, all, your entire family. I
appreciate that so much. I really do. So thank you again.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day and keep up the good work on your great show.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.